Broadcasting from the Republic Bank Studios, The Joe Elliott Show on 970 WGTK. Republic Bank, we were here for you yesterday, we are here for you today, and we will be here for you tomorrow.
Welcome back. It's Joe Elliott at 970 WGTK, 3 minutes past two. We'll hear from the governor in just a little bit here. Had a chance to visit with Governor Beshear about a number of issues. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Interesting to note what's going on with the Louisville Orchestra. William Ehrig resigned yesterday from the Louisville Orchestra board after 12 years. He expressed some concern about the plan to replace musicians with some new musicians. He told the Courier-Journal yesterday, he said, "You don't handle negotiations by putting ultimatums forward on either side." He said, "It doesn't work. You both have to move a little and give toward the middle." Also said, "We seem to be making some progress last week, but not the case right now." We're trying to make some sense of what's going on with the Louisville Orchestra, and orchestra consultant Drew McManus is on our newsmaker line to maybe help us make some sense of this. Mr. McManus has been a musician. He has worked with orchestras really all over the country, and he's been watching this on his website. He's been watching the developments in Louisville with some great interest. I thought it might be interesting just to get his perspective on this. Drew, thanks very much for being on the show. I appreciate you doing it. Were you surprised at the ultimatum that was made by the orchestra on Monday that if the union wants their job, they need to come sign up right now or be replaced by next Monday?
Well, thanks for inviting me on the show. Regarding that question, I think perhaps not surprised so much as disappointed, because it certainly elevates this dispute to a level that hasn't been seen in this field in an organization this size at any point in time.
Well, I think a lot of us were surprised only because we thought there was a deal this weekend, that the orchestra and the union had essentially agreed to the most important parts of this, but they had some pension issues and some other things which many observers around town, Drew, thought could be worked out.
Well, from that aspect, it could certainly be more surprising than not, since those were the early reports coming out. But in a situation where there is as much tension and hostility between both sides, it shouldn't be unexpected at all to see a radical turn in any direction at any point in time.
Well, I think that's absolutely a fair statement. You know, you and I were talking off the air yesterday, and you made the point that while a lot of times we tend to look at this as the classic management labor negotiation, that really this is a little different. An orchestra is a little bit of a different breed of cat. I wonder if you'd talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, I think that's a good topic to discuss, because I've been following the events as well and reading the local newspapers, where there's a lot of comments coming in. And it isn't unusual in situations like this across the country for outsiders or people who are even passionately involved with the organization already to start to fall into traditional stereotypes with their approach toward a labor dispute. And it isn't really applicable in the sense that orchestra musicians are a little different from other unionized employees, where they have a substantially greater level of control over not just the negotiations, but the terms in their contracts and the decisions that have to be made. For example, they get to select who they want to be their negotiator. They have control over, or at least more control over, who their legal counsel is going to be. And any agreement has to be ratified by the entire rank and file after a lengthy review and discussion process.
You know, one of the things Mr. Ehrig said, and this has been said by many people in this town, is that maybe the musicians aren't as aware of how dire the situation is with the Louisville Orchestra, and they have, over the years, had to go with their hat in their hand, essentially trying to find the dollars to make this work, had to declare bankruptcy. That maybe the musicians don't realize the dire situation that the orchestra is actually in.
Well, that's not unusual, actually. Most musicians don't take an active interest or even have the capability or are even allowed to have access to day-to-day decisions in the institution.
Sure.
It usually isn't until something either very good or very bad happens that conversation between both sides tends to kick up. However, one thing that's worth noting is not every orchestra in the country is having problems. There are those that are doing quite well and others that are managing their debt that's just fine, and others like Louisville that are having some extraordinary trouble. And there are some interesting trends between them. The ones that tend to be doing better or holding their own have improved levels of historic working relationships between all the stakeholders, not just musicians and management, but their patrons, board members, donors, supporters, and the extended community. Those groups, I think, are a decent model to demonstrate the sort of situation where Louisville is in now, where board members are frustrated over the fact that musicians don't understand very real and very tangible financial difficulties or even a history of financial difficulties, whereas musicians may be focusing more on strategic concepts. They usually don't disagree or fail to acknowledge that financial difficulties don't exist. And in a lot of cases, they do give concessions without even being asked in some places. But it's that strategic decision of where the organization is, where it's going to move forward, and how well managers and board members listen to their input in that process that can help get through some of those rough patches.
You know, it's interesting because this is an absolute lose-lose. Nobody wants to listen to anybody right now. And
right.
And what this has also done is, I mean, the patrons aren't happy, the partners of the orchestra, you know, aren't happy. Nobody is happy with this. Everybody is pointing the finger of blame. And so it we're really not at a point where, gosh, maybe we can learn from some of these other cities. We're at a point right now where you have to kind of come in and put it back together. Short term, just to speculate here, what do you see developing next? For instance, the orchestra says that they're going to have 50 musicians and that the current musicians have up until next Monday to decide if they want. If you want to work for us, fine. If you don't, that's fine. We'll go out and we'll hire somebody else. Now, the orchestra is on the list of the American Federation of Musicians. It's sort of on their bad boy list there. Is that a serious issue? Is it like getting thrown out of the Book of the Month Club, or is it a big deal? What you know? I know nothing about classical music. What's the real upshot of this, Drew?
I don't know if there's an upshot to it. But there have been some recent precedents as of late to give a little bit of insight into what might happen.
Okay.
Even though there are a lot of musicians out there, and conservatories and schools of music are undeniably turning out higher numbers than they ever have from one year after the next.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a simplistic supply and demand argument. There was a recent very nasty labor dispute in Detroit with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra and their musicians. And at one point when there was a work stoppage, there was a violin soloist who was scheduled to perform with the orchestra, and she decided to go ahead and play a recital with the orchestra during this work stoppage. And the response to this online through social media outlets and through traditional news outlets was extraordinary from the musician community, not even just the organized union component, but just musicians, rank-and-file people on their own in a wide variety of orchestras, just weighed in with an extraordinary amount of hostility and displeasure over the soloist's decision to cross that picket line, so to speak. And I really don't see any indication that the situation in Louisville would be any different. If anything, it may be more extreme because of the level of hostility that has transpired over the last week, especially.
So it's not so easy as to just sort of hang up a help wanted sign and say, we're going to get good musicians to come in here if you guys don't want this job.
Right. You can't just will this into practice. There's a question of not just putting out the sign and saying everyone can come apply, but the logistics in this are also very difficult. How do you disseminate the information? Traditionally, that's done through a host of avenues that are controlled, in some cases exclusively by the American Federation of Musicians, the Musicians Union, or outlets that are tied very closely to them. Some of the independent sources, such as some of the commercial online outlets and some of the service organizations, can pick up some of that, but anybody willing to get involved is going to run the risk of potential political blowback.
Yeah, this only gets more complicated, which is why I'm having a harder time. The more I learn about it, I'm having a harder time understanding the logic in basically throwing down the gauntlet on Monday as the Louisville Orchestra did.
Right. I don't think there's really a lot of logic left at this point, quite frankly. I think it's more about entrenched positions and fighting to the end and just trying to get as much as you can out of it, almost as much to hurt the other side as not. I know there was an interesting point in the letter sent around to, I guess, what are now the former Louisville Orchestra musicians, about the Monday, October 31st deadline you mentioned, that read, in quote, if the Louisville Orchestra hires a permanent replacement for your position and you subsequently make an unconditional offer to return to work, you will only be eligible for a vacant position for which you are qualified to fill. And for an organization that typically bases its operations around artistic standards and artistic excellence, that's a really difficult statement to reconcile with that traditional mission. It seems geared more toward pressure tactics and trying to win and fight a fight as opposed to trying to fulfill a mission.
Well, you know, also, and I know nothing about this, Drew, but I could argue that you might win the battle and lose the war here. Look, the object of the game is to have people who are, to have your patrons who are interested and excited and they want to be part of this, whether at a fundraising level or just to come and enjoy the orchestra. My gosh, nobody's going to want to get in the middle of this. Are you burning down the house? I think that might be if I was in the middle of this would be a real concern for me.
Well, and it should be, and it should be for the entire Louisville community, because there's less and less likelihood of finding a reasonable solution mm-hmm. that every existing stakeholder, especially the musicians and the board, can go in front of a news camera or a reporter and, in all sincerity, with smiling faces, put forward any kind of joint effort that they're both on the same side now. There's so much hostility, you have to start to wonder at what point does the organization perhaps benefit best from starting over from scratch, closing the current organization down, letting the people who are involved with their personal disputes leave and bring an entirely new set of people in.
Teach me something about how orchestras work here. It's interesting. We were at 71 musicians, and I've talked to a couple of musicians who said, you know, 50 musicians, you are just really compromising the integrity of the orchestra, or 55 musicians at the time. This is, you're really compromising the integrity of the orchestra. I'm sure 71 is better than 50. But City of Louisville size, does that sound, and this is very subjective, I know, but does that sound reasonable to you? Could we have a quality orchestra that would deliver the kind of product that people are used to and would enjoy in this town with 50 musicians as opposed to 70?
Well, it is a very subjective issue, and in fact, I would recommend people avoid looking at it from that point of view.
Okay,
instead,
why?
Instead, there's a very dollars and cents approach to the numbers of musicians that you want to employ as salaried musicians. I hesitate to use full-time and part-time because that doesn't necessarily apply to this business. Instead, mm-hmm. it's salaried musicians who are paid a guaranteed weekly wage for X number of weeks, and then per-service musicians who are only hired for a specific concert and are only paid for rehearsals and performances per that concert. From the financial aspect, there are very clear thresholds where there are certain repertoire that require certain numbers of musicians that tend to sell much better than other repertoire. And so at certain stage in an organization's evolution and their growth, it makes more sense to hire additional salaried musicians than continue on the per-service path, simply because it saves the organization more money to do so.
And what does your experience tell you about the situation in Louisville?
Well, you'll get a lot of people who will debate about this particular issue as to where a good threshold is, but it in my experience, it's usually been in the 60s. Around the 64 to 66 number, you can play most of the large repertoire that's available, that's more popular and sells well, and is from the traditional canon, so to speak, as well as playing a lot of the newer music that comes out, with having to hire some additional per-service musicians that doesn't cross that return on investment threshold, let's say.
Let me make the free market argument that you've heard so many times, and it's one that many of our listeners make, who say, listen, I'm happy for the orchestra if it works, but, you know, they have had to go with their hat in their hands so many times, and a lot of people have many of the big boy donors in this town have sort of had some fatigue. They've been asked about so many things. I'm sure that's true in every town, but the point is that the orchestra is just not able to sustain itself, and while it would be a shame, because an orchestra is an important part of the tapestry of the fabric of any city, if they can't make it, they can't make it, and we really shouldn't obsess over this. We should just understand that sometimes tastes change, things change. People don't want to go watch a symphony orchestra play music anymore.
It would be lovely if it were just that easy, but it's actually more in-depth than that. Nonprofit performing arts organizations and even nonprofit charitable organizations are all part of what makes a metropolitan community unique compared to much smaller areas, in that they start to produce things that are greater than the sum of their parts. And the arts and culture and even basic charities are going to be a natural byproduct of that. And so there are plenty of examples that we can go to that will show organizations that have cultural performing arts institutions that are larger budget and are more stable than cities of similar size, and you'll find the opposite as well. The only thing I think you can maybe boil down to that level of most basic understanding is that each organization is reflective of the people inside the organization. So if there's one group that's having more of a difficult time than another, it may have much more to do with internal as opposed to external sources. But unfortunately, the end result isn't different than what you described, which is the money folks in any given community get tired of problems, they get tired of disagreements, they get tired of having people having their hand in their hat all the time, and so they just don't want to be associated with it. But that's no different than any other for-profit business that has an equal number of internal dysfunction, let's say.
But my sense is that many of the patrons of the Louisville Orchestra are, it's a much older crowd. Perhaps that's just the nature of the beast, but it is a much older crowd. They seem to be smaller crowds now, and you know they clearly are not able to support the level of orchestra that we're used to, or that many people in this city would want.
And that could be the case. I think, unfortunately, the point in time where it was probably healthiest for the institution to be able to determine whether that those were external or internal factors has passed.
I get it. Yeah,
and so now at this point, we don't really know the answer to that question, which is probably maybe the larger loss in all of this, is now that we've passed it, people are going to start making their own conclusions without really knowing whether or not what was true and what wasn't. But it all kind of, I think, boils down and comes back to the point that it might be time for the entire community to determine whether or not starting from scratch and starting to ask all those questions again might be a better place to go.
Well, you know, starting from scratch might be a better place to go, but you do take the risk with all the different ways to spend your discretionary time, with all the financial demands that we all have and things now. Might be a long time before we would start up another orchestra. I think that's the fear that you know, many patrons might have, that if we blow this thing up, this thing may never get off the ground. A new
right.
venture may not get off the ground.
That's certainly a concern, and there have been communities where that has been the case, where an orchestra has folded and there hasn't been something to take its place. Miami, Florida was a good example of that. At the same time, there are groups that not only were able to get something new back up and running within a year, there were some groups that already had the 501c3 paperwork filed and ready to go before the Chapter 7 liquidation from the previous group had actually completed. Colorado Springs is a good example of that. I think there's no way around the fact that anything new coming up to replace what was there is going to be at a level, budget-wise, lower
right.
than even both sides are arguing are their thresholds right now.
But your point is, it is what it is, and what we've got now very well may be irreparably broken, and we have to at least face that.
Right, and you're looking at growth potential. And what you don't want to do is cut off your potential to reach your true level of where the organization can go with the amount of public interest and artistic excellence. And it may be faster and easier and with a great deal more harmony, pardon the pun, to get to that point by starting with a new group than trying to use the dysfunctional pieces that are currently in place.
All right, so just a couple of things to sort of leave us with here. If someone on the board of the Louisville Orchestra had called you and said, "Gosh, Drew, you know, this is where we are," what thoughts would you have about maybe what we should do next? And who knows, maybe that person is in his car listening right now. What would you say to that person?
That's a really good question. It's going to take some real Dickinsonian level change of heart on people to really approach this situation and put the pieces back together. They're going to have to set aside personal or political motivated goals and really start listening to one another beyond a point where they currently are. In addition to that, you're likely going to have to look at some changes on the administrative side. It's not unusual for groups in this situation to help build a little peace between board and musicians by finding scapegoats. It's not great if you're the scapegoat, unfortunately.
Right,
and you may
right.
not even deserve it. But it's sometimes the best way out of a situation.
Well, I think you've seen that happen in many different negotiations. Sometimes if you can find one person, even if it's a simplistic answer, and you know we can sort of tag him or her, we remove him, we pretend that all the problems are gone. It at least gives us a fresh start. That's a really interesting insight. I would assume you would have the same basic general advice for the musicians. We need to sort of try to come at this with a fresh slate. If a musician asks you, I want to go to work. I want my job. Should I apply for this job? Should I ignore this ultimatum? What would you suggest?
Under the current conditions that are in place from the letter from management, I would professionally counsel musicians to avoid the situation. There's very little good that can come from it. For example, they're going to have to leave the American Federation of Musicians in order to be able to avoid the penalties that are associated with performing in a group that's on the unfair list, the bad list. And if they do that, it's going to make it near impossible for them to take auditions elsewhere, set aside the political stigma that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So from a dollars and cents point of view, again, you actually cut off your career potential by putting yourself in that kind of position. Even for young musicians just out of conservatory, it's also a difficult place to put yourself in for something that I actually talk to musicians in schools about anyway, which is called the money trap. You don't make enough to really work and do well in a particular area, and you certainly don't have enough money to travel elsewhere and take auditions, and then you throw all of the political misery on top of this, and that's a really, really negative place to start a career.
But that's fascinating. What has happened is, and certainly it wasn't their intent, I'm sure, but perhaps the Louisville Orchestra has put musicians in a place where it's an offer that they have to refuse. You know, that really the long-term consequences of this would just be could be devastating for them and for their careers. That's an interesting way to look at it.
And I'm sure there will be at least a handful, or not. But I would be surprised if there weren't at least a few musicians who are going to have to take the offer simply because they have no other financial recourse
mm-hmm.
in the immediate sense. They're probably facing bankruptcy. They've been going a very long time without being paid. And no matter how much extra work you can try to drum up, it's only so far to go. So they'll put themselves in that situation, which is likely only going to cause an additional amount of stress on their life. It's certainly not going to be as fulfilling on a personal and emotional level for them as performing in an orchestra otherwise would be. And it's very unfortunate to see. And I would say the same for the people working in the staff and on the board, too. I have a very difficult time imagining anyone that really enjoys operating and working in this kind of environment. And if they do, those might be the first people you want to look at to see about replacing.
Wow. And, you know, we're way down the road from this happening, but if you're going to ask me to come to a concert and spend some money, I want to have fun. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I want it to be a positive thing. I don't want it to, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm walking into a, you know, an absolute food fight here. That's
right.
Interesting. You've really given us a lot to think about here. Unfortunately, I am out of time, but this is great stuff. Drew McManus, thank you so much. I really appreciate your insights today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Drew McManus joining us. He is an orchestra consultant. Really giving us a lot of interesting things to think about today on this whole thing. You know, you wonder if the management hasn't unwittingly made their position even more untenable because, you know, this thing may have devolved into a point where you may just have to start over. Interesting. We're going to come back and talk to the governor.